Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to a week four recap, week five preview version of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe, that's Burge, Manalishan alongside as well. Boys, how we doing?
Dude, I don't know about you, Joe. We're flying pretty high as Pats fans after this this week four. I don't know how you're feeling, but I'm feeling pretty confident right now.
Dare I say high as a kite?
All yeah. Right?
Manish, how you doing, man? You got a
4-0 team. I'm doing good. 4-0 team, yeah. And mighty impressive, depending on who you ask, which I guess we'll get into later.
It reminds me of Brady when the Pats were 8-0 and they had that trash schedule. And he was like, I'm the most miserable 8-0 quarterback of all time. And he's just the most miserable 4-0 fan of all time. No, I think, dude, I can identify with that, though. When the Pats are winning games and not playing well, you could definitely identify. Like, you sometimes people are like, oh, like, you guys are so good. Like, you can't, like, complain. It's like, no, dude, like, the standard is excellence. And what was the stat? You'll bring it up, the 1 yard stat. It's like, all right, dude, yeah, I would be pretty pissed, too. But we got a lot to get into. I think we're going to go Pats off the top here. We'll get in and get out of the Pats. I think it was a good week, but I don't think there's too much to take out of this game. I think it's a build on some of the early positive signs for the Patriots. A continuation of the Drake May experience that just makes me float. I'm floating on my couch every Sunday watching Drake May. It makes me so happy. At 4 o'clock, when they lose, I want to jump off my roof. But like at 4 o'clock after a win, and Drake May's throwing for like 80% completion for like 200 yards, multiple touchdowns, no turnovers, and you're just like, whoa, I haven't felt that. I haven't felt that in a minute. Ooh. And I don't know. There's some things I'll bring up. I think we'll go back and forth here a little bit, but kind of my overarching kind of like first thought here is I think it's a good continuation in the right direction. You had another good Will Campbell game. You have another good Drake May game. Defense plays I would call it a representative game from the defense. So yeah, I think everything's going in the right direction, but I don't want to get overly excited and overly upset like I was at the beginning of the season, because I think it is going to be, it's not going to be linear. There's going to be one of these crater games coming up that's going to absolutely kill us when they're going to lose a game they shouldn't. But as of right now, I feel pretty good.
I'm in the same boat. I mean, the start of this game, obviously, we were like, here we go again. Bryce Young's just carving up the Patriots defense to a touchdown. And we're like, why can't this team get off the bus prepared to play? Because, again, the Panthers go down the field, score a touchdown, and then the Patriots come out and they go 3-and-out. We're like, oh, God, here we go again. It's going to be a repeat. They didn't fix anything, but they did. And the biggest takeaway for me in this game is, well, I got a couple. One, they cleaned up the penalties. The turnovers. The turnovers were cleaned up. Still, the penalties are still an issue, but I think we might be on track just given the talent on the team, the experience, and all that. I think we're going to end up, you know, seeing quite a bit of this throughout the season as part of the growing pains of having a young team. The second is Stephon Diggs. I mean, it's kind of his coming out game. He finally, you know, he topped 100 yards in this one. They moved him into the slot by Pop Douglas. I think we can all be very happy with seeing that replacement there. But seeing him, that's what the Patriots need him to be. They need him to be that consistent guy. You know, 6 receptions on 7 targets for 101 yards. That's why they brought him here. So we need to see more of that. Continue to build on it. Him continue to get his legs back from the ACL injury a year ago. And just build on it. And like you said, Joe, we got the big game coming up in week 5 against the Buffalo Bills on the road in primetime. One of, I think, 3 primetime games that the Patriots get this year. Not many. Perfectly timed. A perfectly timed primetime game for the AFC East, I would say. You know, you're either going to have the reigning MVP, Josh Allen, go out and do what he's been doing, as Manish thinks is going to happen. I'm sure we'll get to that. Or we're going to see the emergence of Drake May, because you look at the numbers from Drake May for the first 4 weeks of the season, he's playing at a really high level. You know, notwithstanding the turnovers that he's had, he's playing at a high level.
Notwithstanding the turnovers that he's had, he's playing at a high level?
Yeah, with Stanton. You get what I'm trying to say. I probably screwed up the words on it. Cut me some slack.
No, that's okay. That's fine. To me, this was a special teams game. It's really rare that you win a game by almost 30 points and your running game is okay. I think they rushed for barely 100 yards. The quarterback only threw the ball 17 times and you won by 29. So where's the difference made up? Those numbers don't add up. They only had the ball for 24 minutes. That's a special teams game. And the special teams, to me, was the reason that this game was essentially controlled by New England. Now, I know Drake May played well. He was efficient. But again, he only threw the ball 17 times. They had three running backs run the ball, none more than 38 yards on the ground. So it was okay. You know, typically, when a quarterback throws the ball fewer than 20 times, you expect the team to rush for something like 200 yards, 200 plus yards. And that wasn't the case. So I thought they did, you know, little things well, nothing exceptional on offense other than what you had touched on, Birch. They did not turn the ball over, which is extremely important, of course. Being an Eagles fan, I know that. But to me, first and foremost, the credit should go to the special teams.
Well, that's a good point. Go ahead, Joe.
No, go, Bish. You got something?
I was just going to say that Marcus Jones' return for a touchdown is what flipped the game.
Yeah,
the Patriots looked dead at the beginning, and that touchdown basically, the Patriots hit the ground running after that.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the slow starts that this team keeps getting off to. Like, thank God for Marcus Jones. And there was some stat, like, punts that distance that go into that are like land in that area are like returned so rarely. And dude, Marcus Jones, like, I mean, that first move is just is all world. That first move that he makes, and the fact that he puts literally 10 guys on skates on the first move. It was one move makes a couple guy miss, and it was basically a caravan of blue shirts until you get to the end zone. So I think Mike Vrabel made a couple comments during the week about how great Carolina was on defense. I think that was a little bit of a bait, so they tried to get a little bit – so they were feeling themselves a little bit, and I think the Patriots maybe had some kind of advantage. But, yeah, getting back to the starts, I think they really have to figure that out, and that's like – The one point I want to make before we start previewing next week in this matchup with the Bills is like, yeah, I'm waiting for the Vrabel stamp on this team. It's still a little bit sloppy. It's still they're still getting off to bad starts. They're still coming out a little bit unprepared. And the defense, even though they're not letting up a lot of points, they're offensive and their rushing and passing DVOA are 21st and 28th. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint like what it really is on defense, but I think getting Gonzo back, he had a pretty decent game. Tet McMillan got him on that first one of the first plays of the game, but after that he was pretty solid. I think when you can base your coverage around one lockdown corner, it makes everybody else's job 10 times easier. So I think there's a lot of good building blocks, but there's still a lot to figure out on defense. And I think a lot of these things that I'm looking for are I'm looking for them from the head coaches. Like point, I'm looking for the head coach to put his stamp on this defense. I'm looking for him to put his stamp on this operation. He just put the stamp on the special teams. You just saw that. So I want him to put his stamp on kind of the rest of this team and to make it a more buttoned up professional operation. They are on their way. It does look like they're on their way, but I think there's still a lot of cleaning up to do. And a lot of these things I'm looking for are in Mike Vrabel's court.
I totally agree with that. We know what the Carolina Panthers are, right? Like they're not a top team. They're a bottom feeder right now. They have a quarterback who's undersized, has been kind of an up and down player when he's been out there for the Panthers. But, you know, this is a difference from last year, right? In 2024, like in 2024, the Patriots under Gerard Mayo, this would be a team that they would lose to. So for this team to come out and thump a bottom feeder, like that's, I would consider that kind of like a first step. Like you're on the right track. Like you're taking advantage of bad football and you're beating it and you're not beating yourself. That's what we saw the week before against Pittsburgh. The Patriots looked like a bad team that was beating themselves despite the fact that they dominated the game. So seeing them come out and basically have the franchise's biggest win in, what, 3 or 4 years at this point, like that's that I would consider that the main building block that you take away, and you have a big test next week. You have a big test next week against the Bills.
Manish, you have some thoughts about that game?
The Bills game?
Yeah,
look, I think, I mean, what both of you guys said is fair. You should feel good, as a Patriots fan after that win, regardless of, whether you think Carolina's a bottom feeder or some, middling team at best. I don't think that really matters. I think, controlling a game, essentially, from start to finish, you can say, they were down, 6-0, but for the most part, they controlled this game. And without really having the ball that often, which is, again, odd. But I don't think the game was really in doubt after that, the punt return. So, you should feel good, but it's an entirely different beast this Sunday. It is Sunday, right? Prime time?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sunday night.
Winning in Buffalo in prime time is something that would shock me. It's not because I think the Bills are unbeatable. Clearly, they haven't played their best, but they're still, in my estimation, the best team in football. I don't think that, they're going to win this game. Frankly, I don't think there's really an opportunity for them to keep this close. And you can say, Urge, you'll lay out your case, but I have a general idea about how you think the Bills have played to this point, and I think it's fair, especially if you just look at a few days ago against the Saints, a team that they were favored by more than 2 touchdowns. They didn't cover, but I never really thought that game was in doubt, even if it was quote-unquote close. I just think that the Bills are on an entirely different level, and we can point to their deficiencies on defense. I think a little bit of that is overblown. I think they're terrible against a run, which makes for a fascinating dynamic, which you guys can speak on in a second. But, there was so much discussion a week and a half ago after Ramondre Stevenson had all those fumble issues about whether Trevion Henderson would take over in this Panthers game. And I believe Trevion Henderson's snap share was the least that he's had in his first four games. And Stevenson's snap share dipped a little bit from mid-60s to probably mid-50s, something somewhere in that neighborhood. But I think that if the Patriots have any semblance of a chance of winning this game, they're going to have to control the game on the ground. And that means, I think, Ramondre Stevenson is going to have to be a focal point. Whether he can do it or not remains to be seen. But I think ultimately, when we look back on this game a week from now, we're going to be talking about the Bills controlling this game from start to finish. I'm not saying it's going to be a 3-touchdown blowout, but I think it's going to be a game as you watch that you're never really going to feel like the Bills are in any kind of real jeopardy. Again, I'm coming from a different perspective as you guys. You guys can speak more to why you believe New England can pull this upset.
Well, I'll just point to, talking about the Bills. We talked about how the Panthers weren't exactly a good opponent for the Patriots, but the Bills have really not played anybody outside of, I would argue, that first game of the season, week one, the weird week with the Ravens, where they had that kind of that miraculous comeback that went on. But their schedule to date has been soft. We just talked about, the Saints game. Manish talked about that, but they played the Jets and the Dolphins outside of that. And yeah, they walloped the Jets, which you would expect them to. Miami gave them fits. I mean, it took Tua to have his normal brain fart at the end of the game for the Bills to win that one and close it out. So the Bills definitely haven't, in my estimation, played the best football in the league right now. And that's probably speaking a little bit of bias, because everybody knows that how I feel about Buffalo. I got a strong bias there. But I think that this is a prime situation where the Patriots are going to go in there and they're going to say, this is going to be the measuring stick right now, where they're at. Do I think that they're going to win the game? If I was going to sit there with a gun to my head, no, I'm not going to sit there and say the Patriots are going to win this game. I think they're going to be competitive, which we'll get to in the picks when we start talking about our picks. But for me, if they're competitive and it's a close game and they walk out of there with a loss, I don't know how any Patriots fan can walk out of that game and not feel really good about where things are 5 weeks into the Mike Vrabel era.
I'm just gonna make sure I have the quote correct on my side. Just making sure.
Jesus Christ!
It said, Manish, your verbiage was their Patriots are gonna have a tough time keeping it close. Correct.
That's a sentiment. I don't know if that's what it said exactly, but yeah, I think the Bills will control the game by and large. Yes.
Okay. This is a measuring stick game. I wish this game was a little bit later in the season. I think the second game is going to be the game where hopefully it means a lot to both teams. So you can see kind of the best out of both teams, probably maybe the Bills vying for a number one spot and the Patriots vying for like a playoff spot, get one of those kind of games where it means a lot to both teams. I don't know. Pats are kind of feeling themselves after that last game. The vibe in the locker room was pretty legit. The people at all the players at the podium kind of were refocused and reinvigorated. So I think this is a good win for the Pats. And I think that going into Buffalo, it's kind of a perfect formula. I think they'll be able to run the ball. I think the play action is where Drake May has been making a lot of his hay, either on the bootleg or in the pocket. So yeah, I think it's a recipe for the Pats to maybe pop one this week. But I don't know. We had a lot of happenings on Monday night. We had a tie. It was a tie on Monday night or Sunday night, and then Tyreek's leg turned into a effing pretzel. And do you guys have any thoughts on the kind of the madness of Monday night? Some of the late night stuff that happened before we get into our picks and keep going forward this week.
Yeah, I thought the Sunday night game was very entertaining. I was really surprised about how poor the Packers defense looked. That had been really their calling card through the first 3 weeks of the season. I actually thought that Jordan Love was going to have a good game against Dallas's poorest defense. But I was really surprised how efficient and really explosive the Cowboys offense was against what I thought was a top five defense without, by the way, CeeDee Lamb. George Pickens really came to play and showed himself to be the number one wide receiver that a lot of people had hoped when Pittsburgh drafted him. But I thought that was probably the most entertaining game of the week, to be honest. And unfortunate that it ends in a tie, but that game ran circles around the two Monday night games. Those were complete snore fests, really, really boring. Three bad teams and Denver essentially is how I looked at how Monday night unfolded.
Can you make the effing overtime 15 minutes again, please? What's the deal? There's no point of saving 5 minutes if it results in more ties. There's absolutely – sorry, I just threw my notebook. There's absolutely – it makes me so aggravated, dude. It messes with gambling. There's absolutely – you're professional. These guys are paid. They're just go home. Just start, turn it off. Like, you don't have to – you don't have to watch. It doesn't have to, like, just because the consumer is consuming it doesn't mean you don't have to, like, play out the string. Wasn't there a baseball game that, like, stopped at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning and they played it, like, the next day? Like, it was, like, a 20-inning game. But regardless, like, the Red Sox and Yankees, those games that went to 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, like, you play the game, dude. Play the game out. It's just so, I don't know. Just fucking play the – we made it. No!
We made it 19 minutes.
19 minutes. That was pretty good. That was pretty.
Keep it going.
Good.
Don't fall off the wagon now.
Yeah, dude, I might go right in the effing toilet, dude. But yeah, no, I don't like ties. I think it was a pretty dude. I'm getting the ref stuff is getting weird. All the crews are like, 1 week they'll have a bunch of calls. 1 week they'll have no calls. So it feels like they're like getting so influenced by these weekly, I think they have like some kind of weekly like emphasis call or something like that, or they're on effing Twitter too much. I don't know what's going on with that, but there's a lot of change the overtime, give them 15 minutes, and let's get some more consistency out of these refs because I don't know, I'm sick and tired of all the penalties.
I don't personally don't understand why they don't extend the time. It's not like the NFL has a major problem with games ending in ties. There's been 8 ties since 2017. So in 8 years, there's been 8 ties. So average one a year. So what's the point of shortening it? Like, you add 5 in there. What's the big deal? 5 minutes in there. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get
it. It's almost as if they're concerned that the game will be too long and people will
tune out.
Like turn it off, which obviously is not going to happen, especially if you're only you're talking about 5 minutes of game time. So I don't know, maybe 20 minutes in real action. And I mean, NFL fans will sit through hour long lightning delays and watch the duration of a game. So I don't understand the idea of shaving off just 5 minutes of game time. It makes no sense. And it's funny because you watch these overtime games and before you blink, there's like 3 minutes left in overtime. It goes by so fast. It seems like that the first 5 to 7 minutes of overtime goes by really fast. It's a silly thing. And just to circle back, this isn't what we were talking about, but since you mentioned the Monday night games, I do want to say one thing, which I mentioned to you guys earlier in the day, regarding the Jets-Dolphins game and what happened after that game in terms of what some of the Jets players were saying about penalties. They got flagged 13 times. Which is, you know, what a poorly run team, you know, typically does. One major problem with how the Jets handled that loss, specifically one player, Sauce Gardner, was complaining about penalties and how, you know, because the Jets aren't a good team, they don't get favorable calls. And if you're on a better team, maybe the refs will look more favorably upon you. I think there's a little bit of truth to that. And I think people who are anti-Chiefs fans.
It's not an individual player on a good team.
No, it's not.
It's like players just get better. Like good players and good teams just get better calls in every sport.
You see it in all sports, across all sports. I mean, people were bitching and complaining about Michael Jordan getting calls in basketball. Michael Jordan, by the way, the best player of all time. I would say that for Gardner specifically, I have not seen a more overhyped player in the NFL in the last 5 to 10 years, certainly the last 5 years, than him. Now, if you look at his resume on paper, it looks exceptional the first 2 years. First team All-Pro the first 2 years, which is a very difficult thing to do. But he's been flagged a lot last year. And he's been, getting flagged a little bit this year as well. To me, I don't know why the Jets paid him. They made two big investments in the offseason. I know I'm going on a tangent here, but they made two big investments in the offseason. One I thought was brilliant. Garrett Wilson, to me, is clearly a wide receiver one in the NFL. I don't think he's in the Jefferson, A.J. Brown, Ja'Marr Chase category, but I think he's an ascending star player who is worth every penny that he got in the offseason in his extension. The Jets also paid Sauce Gardner, who to me does really nothing for the Jets. I mean, what does he do other than draw flags because he's constantly grabbing players' jerseys, which is what he did, frankly, in the first 2 years of his career, but for whatever reason, didn't get flagged. But he's really doing the same thing that he's done since he entered the NFL and really dating back to his days at Cincinnati. He was a little bit grabby. They're just calling him now. He can't tackle.
Grabby, dude.
Yeah, he does not tackle, right? He comes from the Deion Sanders School of Tackling for corners. He does not make game-changing plays. He doesn't get interceptions. And you can't say it's because they don't throw to his side anymore or they don't throw to him anymore because they clearly do, and he's getting beaten consistently. I don't know what he does exactly to warrant the extension. And I certainly don't understand why, a middling player at best is whining about not getting the benefit of the doubt from the refs. So it's just a little pet peeve of mine, something that I noticed after the game. Nothing irritates me more, and I think I told you guys this earlier, than a mediocre or slightly above mediocre player complaining about not getting calls. And again, at least in the last 5 years, he is the most overhyped player in the NFL, in my estimation.
Jesus. Dude, I think in my opinion, I think Sauce Gardner is a good player, like capital G good. I don't think he's like great or like, I don't think he's like all pro. I don't think he's like a top five corner anymore. Maybe he was his first year when he wasn't getting thrown at as much. And I think maybe the mystique almost wore off a little bit and kind of the mask kind of came off a little bit. I don't think he's a bad player. I don't think you said that either, but I don't think he's like a bad player. I don't I don't know, the like highest paid corner, like one of the highest paid corners in football. I don't know. I think that's one of those things where like he got paid when his contract came up. And I think a lot goes into it too, that some of these franchises just don't want to be wrong. Like they drafted this guy fourth overall at like a very high profile position. Like they're not going to not, like he's good. You know what I mean? That looks like they hit on the pick. Like he's a fan fit. Like the fans like him. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's
Joe, I just real quick, I might have to push back on that because the fans used to like him. I think there might be the tide turning. I think Jet fans are starting to see. I think they're starting to see that, A, he's not close to Darrelle Revis. I mean, those comparisons a couple years ago were a complete joke. I thought Revis play at his peak, and it's frankly insulting to Revis to even compare this guy to him. Mm-hmm. I would say that there's a segment of the Jet fan base that's starting to see that, hey, this guy is not who we thought he was going to turn out to be, especially after getting those accolades his first couple seasons.
I just can't stand
love when... Jet slander, dude. Just bring it on, dude. Bring it on. Anything that comes to mind, just get it off your chest. We are here for you.
I want to be fair because Garrett Wilson in the same draft class also got a big contract extension, and that was a extremely smart move by the organization because he's actually a difference making player. I don't believe, and he has gone through, you know, his fair share of, you know, middling to poor quarterback play. Otherwise, that guy would be putting up 1,500 yards a season in my mind. So it's not like every player that they have stinks. Clearly, you know, Quinnen Williams to be, you know, one of the best defensive tackles in football, and Garrett Wilson, an exceptionally good young player who deserves every, like I said earlier, every penny that he gets. It's Gardner to me, and look, I don't know Sauce Gardner. I've never spoken to him. Sure, he's a great guy. You know, that aside, he's such an overrated football player. I cannot tell you how ridiculous it is to think that he is not even in the same stratosphere as Patrick Surtain, for example. He's not even better than Derek Stingley. Now, he was taken before Derek Stingley. After Derek Stingley was. And Stingley, if you guys remember, dealt with some injury issues coming out of college, also the first year, 2 years with the Texans. But and I think he's actually backed up now. But if you're being objective about it today, Stingley is a better quarterback than Sauce Gardner. And the idea of Sauce Gardner, because he has a good PFF grade, whatever that means, is some kind of exceptional talent, is laughable to me. He's not.
Your agent writes a big check to PFF.
Yeah.
PFF grades. We should do a separate podcast about how irrelevant PFF grades are.
Just debunks of PFF. Dude, they had one. Sorry to pick on Will Campbell. They had one. They had Will Campbell for a clean sheet, I think it was. And there was like a blatant one where he like missed a guy. Like he was blocking his guy, like that he was lined up against. But there was like some kind of stunt on the defensive line that like caused, like they should have like tried to pass off blockers so he could like get the guy coming around the end and he totally whiffed. And PFF like graded it as like a pass block win. And it's just like, it's like so blatantly a fucking sack letting up by the left tackle. It's not even funny. But let's get into Burge. Your time to shine, buddy. Bust out that effing spreadsheet, dude. Let's talk about our picks from last week, and then we'll get into our picks from this week.
We had some picks last week. Some of us did pretty well. Some others. Goose egg.
I'll be back in 10 minutes, guys. Tell me when the segment's over.
So, to recap, Mr. Scher had Tampa Bay +3.5 for his loss. That was that Baker interception was probably the one where you were ready to go to the roof, ready to go. You had New England -5.5, which was a easy win, and you also had the Rams -3.5 for a win, which brings your record for last week at 2-1, overall 7-5 on the year in the front seat, driver's seat of the championship race there. Myself, Detroit -9, big number, don't care. Got that win. Baltimore -2.5 was a big major number, loss. Don't care. Was a major loss. Even before Lamar Jackson got hurt, that was a loss. Chiefs handled the Ravens. And then New Orleans Saints plus 16 and a half. Got the win. Got the win on that one. Another big number. Don't care. Don't care. 2-1.
12 in covering.
Yes. Hey, that's why I took the number. That's why I took the number. So I was 2-1 last week. Brings my measly record to 4-8-1 in the basement currently because of a push that our next guy got the week before. And that's Manish. Manish had a rough week. Chargers minus 6.5 loss. Green Bay minus 7 lost because of the tie. And Cincinnati plus 7.5 mega loss. So rough week for Manish. Joins me at 0-3.
Burge, can you enlighten me on the criteria for a mega loss?
When you pick a game and you get blown out. That's it.
All right.
When you pick a game,
it's a fluid definition.
I'm gonna say it when I want to say it. when my first pick, I'll go first. My first pick at New England plus 7.5 hits next week. It's gonna be a mega win, and I'm gonna toss that right Manish's way after all the slander that I got for that. I will say I picked this game on Sunday and I had plus 8.5 and I was overruled for being allowed to put that in. Next time I'm putting a slip in and on Sunday, and I am going to actually claim that as mine. So I'm just going to go through and give all of my picks. So New England plus 7.5. I have Dallas minus 2 and I have Detroit minus 10. Again, a big number. I don't care. The numbers work. I loved what I saw from Dallas against Green Bay. I like them to build on that to, make that win. And then again, Detroit all in on them. We'll get to them in the power rate when we do our power ranking segment. So I like them to keep rolling. So minus 10, Joe, who you got?
All right. So off the top, I'm going to go the Browns plus 3. Is it plus 4 or plus 3.5 now? No, I did it to myself. It's plus 4. All right. Browns plus 4. I think Carson Wentz effing stinks, dude. I thought he had one MVP season, tore his ACL. He stinks, dude. The Vikings, without a quarterback, they stink, dude. They're going to go to Cleveland. I think the boys on the defense of the Browns are going to be fired up. I think they're going to keep it close. I think this is going to be a very low-scoring game. So give me the Browns to cover 4 points. Next one I have is the Indianapolis Colts minus 6.5 at home versus the Raiders. Dude, the Raiders smell. I think they blew one last week. They absolutely blew it, dude. They stink, dude. The Colts, I think Daniel Jones, at least at home, I trust Daniel Jones and the Colts. I think they can run the hell out of the ball. They figure it out. Jonathan Taylor has been rebirthed, dude. He looks un-effing believable. So give me the Colts at home to cover a touchdown there at 6.5. And then the piece de resistance, dude. The piece de resistance is going to be, we're going to go with the Chiefs. Where the hell does my line go? All right, here we are. Yeah. The Chiefs minus 3.5 on Monday night. The Jaguars, I think, are riding high coming off of beating the 49ers. And I think the Chiefs got a big confidence boost while kind of handling the Ravens before they kind of fell apart there and their game on Sunday. So, give me the Chiefs to go on the road to cover 3.5 versus the Jaguars.
Go ahead, basement dweller from last week.
Okay, well, I'm guaranteeing at least 2 wins. These are two of the three. If you bet on these games and do not win 2 of the 3, I'll give you my address. I'll pay for whatever you owe. Burge, by the way, give me your address so I can pass it along as my own. All right, well. First and foremost, so Joe, you and I have to talk because I have the Browns getting 3.5 instead of 4. And the only reason I care is because I'm taking the other side of that. And Carson Wentz may stink, but I think Joe Flacco and the Browns, generally speaking, stink more. So, and I'll agree with you. If the Vikings do go to Cleveland, they have no chance of winning because this game is actually in London. So that's where the game's going to be played. And it'll be a neutral field, essentially.
Did the Vikings stay there?
The Vikings in some weird scheduling quirk went from Ireland to London So they've been out of the country probably for, out of the country for 2 weeks.
Probably one of their shorter flights of the season.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
They've been out. They'll be out of the country for a couple weeks. But yeah, I just think the Browns are terrible. Say what you want about Carson Wentz. Not the Carson Wentz that I hold dear to my heart in 2017, helped the Eagles get to a Super Bowl in the first 10 weeks as the leading MVP candidate above Tom Brady. Again, different discussion for a different time. I'm going with the Vikings. -3.5, -4 probably. I guess we can discuss afterwards what the official line is going to be.
No, it's 3.5. I just checked. I don't know. ESPN bet's weird, but on DraftKings, it's 3.5. So let's go with 3.5.
Okay. Yeah. Are you taking just as a quick aside? Are you taking any of the Stephen A. Smith parlay suggestions on ESPN bet?
No, I'm not. I actually get kicked out. Dude, South Carolina is so annoying. Carry a gun. Drive as fast as you want. Friggin' buy booze at friggin' 3:00 in the morning. Who cares? But if you place a sports wager, we will come burn down your effing house, dude. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. Anyway, go, Manish.
Okay, my second game is my lock of the week. You can take this, take it to the bank. -2.5. Los Angeles Chargers hosting the Commanders. I don't know if Jane Daniels is going to play or if it's going to be Marcus Mariota. I don't really care. After the Chargers lost to Jackson Dart and the Giants somehow, I think they'll have revenge on their minds. I think they're going to blow out Washington at home. It'll be interesting to see how the offensive line holds up for Justin Herbert now that it looks like Joe Waltz banged up, probably not going to play. I think you know that they're already missing their left tackle, Slater, for the season, but I don't think it matters. I think the Chargers coming off that loss are going to be out for blood. They're going to cover the 2.5 easily. I think this is a double-digit win for the Chargers. And my last one is my upset, technically upset. It's the Bucs going to Seattle, never an easy place to play. The Seahawks and Sam Darnold are playing really well. They've won 3 in a row. But, you know, I'll take a page out of Burge's book and say, well, who have the Seahawks actually beaten the last couple weeks, the Saints and the Cardinals. Who cares? The Bucs are a completely different animal. They are banged up, but I like the 3.5 that Baker Mayfield and company are getting on the road. So I'll go with Tampa over Seattle, my quote-unquote upset special. And again, I'm guaranteeing that two of these three at the very least are going to be right.
Man,
Tampa pick.
Next week's going to be fun if two of these don't hit. Next week's going to be fun.
I mean, frankly, I'll be very surprised if I don't hit all three, but I'm guaranteeing that two of the three will be correct.
I love Cocky Manish, dude.
Quick disclaimer. Quick disclaimer here. Manish did snipe out the first three picks of this. He sniped it out. I'm trying to see what time he sent it.
Wait. I think it was right before I went to bed. It was like midnight. Yeah. Wasn't it close?
It was like midnight.
Yeah. I mean, look, honestly, I always give a disclaimer if you guys feel passionate about it. Maybe not this week, but typically.
11:31 p.m., dude. I don't even think the Monday night games were over, dude.
Hey, man. I got nothing going on Monday night other than watching two horrible football games.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to get these bets in. As a gentleman, I stayed away from the Patriots game because I knew that you guys, like one of you guys at least, would dive in and take the bait and take the points.
You could have gone the other way. You're so confident.
I am very confident.
Manish take 8.5, though. I would have been the exact opposite. I would have been the same amount of hard, but in the other way on Manish.
Yeah. 31-20 Buffalo, and it's really going to be closer to 31-13. You're gonna have a garbage time touchdown to make it look a little closer than it actually was.
I'm already upset, dude. All right, do you guys want to argue some more and get into the
hold on, range? Hold on.
Do we have more picks?
When I went through my picks, I did all three of them. I didn't really go into my rationale. My rationale is going to be pretty quick. We already did the Patriots.
You just read them off and then just said, boys.
I went a little quick there, so next week that's not going to happen. Patriots. One note I'm going to throw in there: the last three games that the Bills have played with the Patriots, actually last four, decided by a touchdown or less. So,
including 7.5, where the Bills were playing like guys that are literally on lawnmowers right now. Like,
well, that's the game the Patriots won, though, and that was actually, I'm looking at it right now, the biggest point differential was that game, and it was the Patriots win.
Oh, wow.
Joe Milton. So, the last four matchups. Hey, 25 or 29-25, 27-21, 24-21, 23-16. So, yeah. That's my defense there. The Cowboys game, they're playing the Jets. That speaks for itself as to why I'm all in on that. And then the Detroit is playing the lowly Bengals, who just got destroyed on Monday night. So that's my justification. Next week, the format will be a little bit cleaner. But yes, go ahead. Let's argue some more. I'm ready for this one.
All right, we're going to start at 5, dude. We're going to go with the Rams, dude. I think I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think there was Joe saying that we watch out for the GD Rams on one of the early podcasts just here. Coach quarterback combo. We talk about it every week. They got Matt Stafford. They got Sean McVay. Two of the best to do it in the league. The Rams. I think the dark horse Rams. It's underway. I'm gonna put my pants back on. You guys have anything to say about the Rams?
Yeah, I think they very well should, and I hate saying this, but I will because why not? They should be 4-0. They had two field goal attempts blocked in the fourth quarter against Philly. Otherwise, they win that game. I'm with you. You know, coach quarterback combo is probably the most important aspect when you look at football teams. If you got it right at those two spots, you're probably going to be successful more times than not. They do have a relatively daunting stretch here before their bye. Niners, Ravens, Jaguars, you know, not the easiest stretch of games. So they'll be tested, but I think ultimately they're going to win the NFC West and they're going to be a viable Super Bowl contender, every bit as good as Philly and Detroit and even Green Bay. I think, honestly, 5 might be a little bit too low for them.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I love the Rams, dude. I love McVay. I love Stafford. I don't know. I think even though they traded away the entire farm to like kind of get their Super Bowl there, I think they've done a really prudent job drafting in the later rounds, like getting guys like Puka Nacua and like I think was he a fifth round draft pick or something like that? So yeah, he was or third round draft pick. So
he was later than third. Yeah,
he was definitely a fifth round draft pick. So I don't know. Burge, you have anything on the Rams?
Nope. I agree with everything you guys have said about the Rams.
Excellent. All right. Packers at 4. I think the coach quarterback combo kind of goes out the window here. I think this is just a stacked roster with a good quarterback. I think LaFleur, like Matt LaFleur, if you're listening to this, send me a DM, come on the pod, prove me wrong. I think Zach LaFleur might be an effing idiot because like there's sometimes that – I don't know. Just some of the decisions I see being made in this team and the immense amount of talent just gets me concerned sometimes with, I don't know, how they don't win more games.
You know what's funny about the Packers, specifically their defense? You know, I spoke about it earlier. You guys watched the game. Micah Parsons was largely irrelevant in that game, and he made an exceptional play late in that game, tackling Dak Prescott, I think at the 1 or 2, big play, but really irrelevant to the point where you're watching the game, you're seeing that he's not really making any kind of difference until the one play that was a big difference, and you wonder maybe Jerry Jones wasn't a complete dope for trading him, and I think the best part of that game was that when it was over, I think the drama between Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons hopefully will go away now. You got Jerry Jones saying this week that in response to Micah Parsons taking a not so subtle shot at Jones, Jones said, well, you know, calling him after the trade was kind of off the table because Micah told me, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Micah told me, during the negotiations to kind of lose my number. So there's obviously a lot of friction between the two. There's been so much drama regarding Micah Parsons' divorce from Dallas that I'm kind of glad that this Packers-Dallas game is over with. So hopefully we don't have to hear much more about it. But I just thought that it was telling that in this primetime game, a real big opportunity for Micah Parsons to stick it to his former team. He did nothing for about 59 minutes. Or no, I'm sorry, it went to overtime, so 60 plus minutes.
Pretty quiet, pretty quiet game from the from defense in general, any defensive player. So yeah, I agree with Packers at four. Good young team, up and coming team, learning how to win. I think once they kind of figure out how to win in multiple ways instead of do what they do, I think that's their last hurdle to get over. We have the Lions at three. Burge, go.
Everybody knows me. I'm a big Lions fan. They seem to have, you know, their offense is still rolling. Even without Ben Johnson there, the talent that this offense has, they're just in sync. I mean, they can beat you multiple ways, whether that's the dynamic duo of Gibbs and Montgomery, whether you're feeding Amon-Ra St. Brown, who seems to be just eating receptions for this Lions team. They find a way to do it, and they handled the Browns in the last week. Now, we can say what we want about the Browns. We know that they're not a good team at all, but this team just is continuing to do where they left off last year before they got eviscerated by all of those injuries. And the loss of the coordinators has, losing to the Packers in week one, we all have been very vocal on here talking about how, you know, week one can always be an anomaly, right? Like, it's a weird week. And, you know, they're the kings of that division until the Packers knock them off. You know, this is a common theme, and we'll get into that as we go up this list. But the dynamicness of that offense with the way that they can beat you in multiple different ways, hard to play against. How do you scheme up? Are you going to take away the run game? Well, then they're going to feed Jameson Williams, Sam Laporta, and Amon-Ra St. Brown all day. Take away those guys, they're going to run all over you with the best running back tandem that the NFL has right now. They can beat you multiple ways, and I think they're going to continue this, and they're the class of that division until someone knocks them off.
And they got an early bye this week. Oh no, I'm sorry, they're playing the Bengals
next week.
They're going to win that game.
Yes,
the rare back-to-back bye.
Yeah, they do have a great game coming up in prime time in 2 weeks at Kansas City. So I think was it last year, the year before, first game of the season, they went into Kansas City and won. I know it's a different Kansas City team, but if Kansas City kind of continues, you know, what they did last week with Xavier Worthy back in a couple weeks, that could be a fun game. Detroit at Kansas City. I believe it's a Sunday night, but it's a primetime game for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And they're coming off the bye too. I mean, that could be the first. Could that be the first game that
we're seeing? They're not really coming off a bye. They're playing the Bengals, which I consider a bye.
Oh,
they're playing
the Bengals. I'm looking at the schedule. I'm like,
they have a
it's
bye.
A joke, Burge.
All right. I should have been looking for that. Looking at the video when.
Do we want to get into the meat and potatoes of this list? Can we finally get into the meat and effing potatoes of this top five, please? So there's been a lot of contention, but this is a democracy. We run a tight democratic republic where the popular vote matters, and since it was 2-1, we have. The Bills at two. Burge, I'm going to let you go. Just keep it on the rails if you can.
Look, the Buffalo Bills are not the best team in the NFL until they knock off the best team in the NFL, and we'll get to that when we get there. Well, you know, I'm just going to even go ahead and say it. The Eagles are our number one team. This is going to be the contentious of the argument. We're just going to go back and forth about it. Joe and I have the Bills at two. Manish has the Bills at one. I'm going off. This season, you look at who the Buffalo Bills have played so far, okay? The Ravens, they may not be what we thought they were at the beginning of the season. They're 1-3 right now. And then they've gone through the Dolphins, the Jets, and the lowly Saints with Spencer Rattler at quarterback. Their records, the combined record of their opponents this season so far, up until, you know, we get into this game coming up.
Wow, dude.
2-14.
Wow.
2-14. The Eagles, on the other hand, they just beat the undefeated Bucks. Their opponents, 9-6-1. So going off weeks 1-4, they have faced stiffer competition and that for me is in itself enough of an argument to place the Eagles above the Bills, not to mention that the Eagles are the defending champions of the league, as well as the way that the Bills defense has played. I have watched some of the Bills this year, and watching them play in these games where they have played opponents, again, 2-14 for the season, I don't want to say struggled because it may not be the right word, because they obviously are the better team in all of those matchups. Those games were a hell of a lot closer than they should have been. And, you know, you had your brain fart of Tua. We talked about that. Basically saved the game for the Bills against the Dolphins. And then even the Saints challenging them, where they have looked like a junior varsity football team through four games. I mean, until we see these teams, like, especially Buffalo, play like that, the best of the best. I don't want, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but like a better team.
Week one, dude.
But again, the Ravens may not be who we think they are. And it took Derrick Henry fumbling in a comeback to win that game. Now, granted, credit to them for staying in it and completing that comeback. I'm not trying to take anything away from what they did in that game, but Derrick Henry fumble and the fact that the Ravens may not be what we thought they were at the beginning of the season. Me, like, that's it. What's going to happen if they lose to the Patriots, or they're competitive with the Patriots and it's a close game? To Manish's point, he doesn't think it's going to be close. But if it is, what's going to happen? What are we going to be talking about the Buffalo Bills?
Okay, so, Burge, you can't control who you played through the first four games. But what you can control is, I mean, what do they do against these crappy teams? They scored 41, 30, 31, and 31 points. So their worst offensive or their worst output as a team, 30 points against bad teams. That's what you're supposed to do, right? They have the best pass defense statistically. We can have a deeper discussion about whether they actually do have the best pass defense in the NFL. Their run defense is atrocious. I'll give you that. But I can counter that pretty easily by telling you that the Eagles have the 30th ranked total offense, the 31st ranked passing offense, averaging 138 yards per game. That's per game, not per half, per game through the first month of the season. The Eagles just won a game, yes, when their quarterback completed exactly zero passes in the second half, and when they had a total of -1 yards of offense in the second half. Are you really telling me that a team that we just saw the last two quarters of football in the NFL, a team that did not complete a pass in the second half of the most recent week and had a total of -1 yards, that's the best team in football, as opposed to a team who, again, has scored 41, 30, 31, and 31 and has the best pass defense, the number one pass defense in football? No disrespect for the Eagles. Look, I like the Eagles, obviously. Look, I'm a lifelong Eagles fan. But the idea that this team, through 4 weeks, I don't care that they're 20-1 in their last 21 games, because this power ranking is for the first four games of the 2025 season. And there is no way that you can tell me that they are the best team in football. I don't think they're the second best team in football.
You start somewhere, right? You start at week one before the first week, and you put a power ranking together of like what you think the landscape of the NFL will be based on what happened last year, what happened.
But that's week one.
I feel like you have to lose game. Like, dude, it's just like in college. If you're the number one team and you beat fucking St. John, beat like St. John's Tech, St. Mary's School for the Blind by 3 points, like, you're still gonna be number one. Like, I just don't, like, I totally see where you're coming from, Manish, and we talked about it before. I think you have Patriots-itis, or you have excellence disease, because like you're like, we're 4-0, but like, gosh darn it, we ain't the best. And like, dude, I totally get that. There's a million times, there's 20 years that we probably felt the same way about the Pats. Totally get where you're coming from. But what I will say is, in this pass happy forward pass happy, RPO gadget, sideways throw, West Coast bootleg league that we're in now. I think the Eagles have found a way to be almost the counterculture. Like when the reason why everybody in the NBA shoots threes is because there's this team called the Warriors that came out of nowhere and shot a bunch of threes and made them at a high level and changed the game of basketball. Now there was a show on turf in the early 2000s that changed the game of football, the forward pass, Peyton Manning, there you can't touch the receiver, all this crap. So now it's gone so far in one direction that the pendulum's starting to swing, that you have all these teams out there that have cover corners, they play nickel, they have three corners on the field, they have five defensive backs, they have two linebackers that maybe weigh a combined 495 pounds between them, and then maybe you have three defensive tackles on your roster. So, like, I understand that the forward pass will always be the almighty in the NFL. Like, I totally understand that. But I think the Eagles have found a way to go in the other direction and have perfected something so good in the other direction that teams are so obsessed with stopping the forward pass and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce that you go up against the Eagles and they have three guys that weigh – there's three Belgian show horses in the middle of the line, and you have one of the most skilled, one of the best, most well-rounded running backs to ever play the game in the backfield. And then to top that off, you have a winner at quarterback who might not be immensely talented at throwing the ball, but does his job and does what he needs to get win the game. What else do you want, dude? Like, what?
Let me play any team
in the NFL right now, they win the game. Okay. I sincerely believe if the Bills have to go to the Philadelphia and play the Eagles, the Eagles are going to run for 240 yards and win the game 21-3.
Okay, so this is exactly what I'm talking about. The Eagles' offensive line has been subpar this year. If you talk to Eagles fans, they will admit to you this offensive line looks like an imposter compared to as recently as last year. This is not the same offensive line. Landon Dickerson is playing, but he was banged up in the offseason. He is obviously not the Landon Dickerson that I remember from a year ago. He's not the all Pro Bowl caliber guard that he's been. He's hurt. Lane Johnson, you know, he's been banged up a little bit. Their offensive line is a shell of what they were a year ago. Saquon Barkley, I mean, if you just watch these games, he's averaging through the first month of the season 3.1 yards per carry. And that's atrocious. And Saquon will tell you that. The big plays aren't there. The home run shots aren't there. He's had one good run this season, a 13-yard touchdown against Kansas City, which was blocked up well when he had a big hole. Their offensive line has been a major problem this year, and that is why they are not running the ball even close to as effectively as they were last year. Statistically, they're legitimately in the middle of the pack. They're 16th in rush offense. But more to the point, Saquon Barkley has looked poor. And I love Saquon Barkley, but I'm not going to pretend that this is the Saquon Barkley that we saw rush for 2,000 yards last year. This is not. It's not even close. And part of that is Saquon maybe trying to do a little bit too much to offset the issues along the offensive line. This is not a top 10 offensive line this year. It's typically been a top 3 offensive line in football for most of the last 5 years, I would say. This year, I don't think they're in the top half of the NFL. And this is an unbiased opinion from an Eagles fan. So nobody in the NFL is changing how they're running offenses because of what the Eagles did last year. The Eagles can't even replicate what they did on the ground through the first month, as they did last year. A completely different team. So this is what I'm saying is that it's easy to kind of say, hey, you know what? This team has won so much in the last year and a half. They were awesome last year. They didn't need to run the ball. Pass the ball. Jalen Hurts and the offense was, I think, bottom three, bottom four in pass offense. Didn't matter. They won the Super Bowl, right? So why don't we change how we play football? Nobody's doing that because the Eagles have shown through the first month of the season that they can't even do it. Their rush offense has been terrible. I mean, by every objective measure, Saquon Barkley has been terrible this season.
I just want it on the record. If the Patriots go the way of the Eagles, I am not a fan. I do not want them to run the football bunch. I don't think it's fun. I just think it's a good counterculture to everything that's going on, which is why I think they're super successful with it. I guess that was my point. But, dude, Manish, you obviously make a good point. Birch, go.
I'm just going to say, like, you just listed off all those statistics and the way they've been playing. They're finding ways to win games against good teams. They're finding ways to win.
They blocked two field goals. They blocked two field goals in the fourth quarter, which is fluky by every objective measure.
That's what good teams do.
That's fluky. That's fluky. Two fourth quarter field goal blocks in the same game. When was the last time that happened?
I can't tell you. I don't know when that last time that happens. I'll give you to an extent that it's fluky, but good teams find ways to win in every different way. And
they are a good team. Guys, they're a good team. I'm not saying they're a bad team. They're not the best team in football through the first month of the season. They're just not.
It's a bit of the same. And Joe bringing up the whole Patriotsitis thing, because I could sit there and remember myself over the 20 years of the dynasty run of the Patriots where they're 8-0 and I'm feeling miserable. Like, are they good enough to win it all? Are they good enough to win it all? Like, they're coming up, they're beating these. Oh, they barely beat this one win team. Like, are they good enough? And they win the Super Bowl that year. Like, a prime example of that would be 2019, where they were like, throughout the season, I think they still finished 12-4. What I think it was 12-4 that year. But nobody in New England, at least the New England fans, thought they were going to win a Super Bowl that year. Like, it was one of those years where they. The best team.
Manish's point, dude. Stop.
What? How?
He just did, dude.
How?
We're literally freaking out. Being,
I'm
like,
sitting here
sick,
saying,
dude.
And I'm saying that, as
dude, the fans knew that they weren't good enough to win.
That's how they felt. That's how I felt. But at the end of the time, they were the best team. They were the best team.
Hey, look, I'm not saying the Eagles can't improve as the next 3 months unfold. Sure they can. They've got a new offensive play caller, so there could be a learning curve here. You know, there could be some rough spots. I'm just saying, in real time, we rank the teams through the first 4 weeks of the season. I have to be fair about it. I have watched every snap the Eagles have played. They are not the best team in football. They're a good team, maybe a very good team, maybe a top five team. But the notion that a team with this poor of an offense is the best team in football, I just can't get on board with it.
I
the last time a team blocked multiple field goals in a game was 5 years ago. That's a multiple field goal. I suck at Googling shit, but like stuff. But I can't find any same quarter data. I don't know.
Yeah, somebody else is
gonna have to do that.
I want to make it clear. I do think they're a good team. I don't think they're the Titans or the Jets or the Dolphins or the Saints. They're obviously not. But the idea that a team, this offense is so bad. The idea that a team with this type of offense, without the best defense, I mean, I think they're middling defense. They're winning the games, but they're not the best team in football through 4 weeks. Even though the Packers just tied Dallas, the Packers, in my estimation, are better. And this is going to sound, you know, kind of ridiculous, but I believe it in my heart. Even though the Rams lost to the Eagles 2 weeks ago on those two blocked field goals, I think the Rams are a better team right now than the Eagles.
I don't hate that.
I would say that the Rams will win more often than not if they play the Eagles 10 times.
I'm not going that far.
You fucking gag me.
Well, of course not. You think they're the best team in football.
I do. That's why. I'm like,
I disagree. I respectfully disagree. The offense, if you guys sat down and watched every snap of the Eagles this year, you would laugh at how inept their offense is.
Would you rather? Never mind. We're not. We've run out of time here. That was fun. We should do that more often.
We gotta disagree more,
dude. I hope the Eagles win like 3-0 and have like 48 yards of offense in the Bills.
Yeah, exactly.
Just barely squeak out one versus the Patriots. So we're just like,
right.
Do it all again next week.
We're like, the Bills can't cover. The Eagles can't score, but we're still here.
So I want to see like a game where the Eagles win 3-0. Jalen Hurts has 75 yards passing, 40 yards rushing, and then you come on and tell me that Jalen Hurts is a winner.
Yeah. He's changing the game the way the game is played, Manish.
He's a winner.
Right. I'm
sure
he's
a winner. You can't deny that.
Yeah, you know who this is. When people say that to me, I have two counters to that. Entering last season, before last season, you know who had a better winning percentage than Jalen Hurts? Brock Purdy. Nobody was calling him a winner. They were calling him scrappy and a product of the system. All he does is, you know, give the ball to Debo and Ayuk and CMC. They weren't calling him a winner. They were just saying, hey, he's a system quarterback. And the other guy who everybody says, the other quarterback, now granted, he was at the college level, not the NFL level, but early on in his career, it was at the NFL level. All I would hear, he's a winner. He's a winner. He does it an unorthodox way, but he wins games. Tim Tebow. That's all I heard. He's a winner. Winner of Florida, winning games in weird ways with the Broncos. And you know what John Elway thought of that? He thought, you know what? I got to ship him off to the Jets so I can sign an actual great quarterback in Peyton Manning.
Well, dude, I mean.
Let's start comparing Tim Tebow and Jalen
Hurts.
Jalen Hurts is a terrible passer. Well, not terrible. He's an average passer, but he does not look like he's. He's not like, does not look like he's throwing a gallon of paint. Like,
exactly.
No, I hear the same thing about quarterback being a winner over and over in Philadelphia. Jalen Hurts is a winner. He's a winner.
Cam Newton was a better college quarterback than Tim Tebow. Don't at me.
Tim Tebow, but I just, winning is not a quarterback stat. Winning is a team stat and a head coaching stat. Not a quarterback stat. Winning is a quarterback stat. You know what I would say? You know what quarterback has four road playoff wins, including in one season, back-to-back playoff wins over Tom Brady and Peyton Manning? You know who that player is?
No, he's not
in the league anymore.
Oh,
he's got first 2 years of his career. He
Mark
had
Sanchez.
Four road playoff games.
Mark Sanchez.
Yes, Mark Sanchez. Where people were saying Mark Sanchez is a winner. No, the Jets won those games over Tom Brady's Patriots and Peyton Manning's Colts.
I think
I'm going to have to buy a Jalen Hurts jersey just to wear every week on this podcast. I'm going to have to do it.
Oh, dude, I'll get one tattooed on my cheek, dude.
Winning is not a quarterback stat. I do not like when people say that a quarter. Forget Jalen for a second. Anybody, he's a winner. Now, he's not a winner. The team that he plays on is good enough to win games. There's a subtle yet important difference.
So Tom Brady is not a winner. His team was good enough to win games.
Tom Brady threw for 50 touchdowns in a season last I checked. If Jalen Hurts ever does that, you know, you got me.
All right, so the most wins in NFL history, Tom Brady, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger. These guys suck, dude.
Exactly. Those are actual great quarterbacks because they were – if you watch them play, they were actually great quarterbacks.
Fucking Matt Ryan's 14 on this list. I'm married. All right, everybody, you proved the point.
All right, Matt Ryan is like the Jim Cott of football. He played a long time.
Matt Ryan is like the friggin' Caris LeVert of NFL. Like he just he could score it and score 50 in a game, but as soon as the going gets tough, the bung gets nice and tight. Anyways, that was between the tackles. I'm Joe. That's Birch. Benish as well. You guys have any last words before we get out of here?
Jalen is a winner. Jalen is a winner. I want to end with that.
I got one last thing. 31-20, Bills.
All right.